I thought I would take on the task at this point of using my gift for oversimplification to explain to everybody here what globalization is all about. Since obviously there are different conceptions of it, for example, if you were to consult a French intellectual, clearly globalization is the horrifying fact that English is everybody's second language, that EU committees cannot meet without using English because that's the one language they're sure that everybody speaks, and that if you were to advise your children in the United States as to what language they, what additional language they should learn, you're more likely to suggest Spanish or Chinese than you are to suggest French. Now imagine having spent several centuries trying to outwit the British by, and in the end bankrupting your country to support the American War of Independence, only to discover that you have created a stepchild of the Anglo-American world that is a greater threat to French cultural hegemony than anything else. But that the more objective account, I'm going to present a general account of globalization, try to indicate what I think the logic of it is, and to give you what I think is a conservative understanding or rendering of that. Right, I'm going to begin with the fact that the most important event in the last 400 years is the technological project. And by that, I don't mean the fact that we all have gadgets that people over 40 have difficulty using. What I'm talking about is a different attitude toward the world, namely, instead of simply conforming to the order of the world and thinking of everything in agricultural terms, we think in terms of transforming the world, or to use the expression used by Descartes, to make ourselves the masters and possessors of nature. That is not simply a fact. I would argue that it is an irresistible fact. No doubt the technological project comes with all sorts of problems, and they're worth discussing, but I don't think it's possible to resist. To give one example of it, I attended a conference in Bali, Indonesia, several years ago. There were 400 people there who were all critics of the technological project. They had me there to represent the other side. I thought that was fair, 400-1. And what I had to do was remind everybody at the conference that in order to get to Bali, we all took airplanes, we all showed up with our laptops, and when the air conditioning didn't work in the hotel, people complained. So in fact, we are committed to this, and I don't think it's possible at this point to go back. Second stage of the account of globalization. In order to carry out the technological project, one needs a free market economy. Why? Because the technological project involves constant innovation and thinking outside the box. You therefore need an economy that can do at least two things for you, provide competition, that means private property, and to provide the resources necessary for the continuing advance of technology. Adam Smith made this clear in the 18th century, but it took 200 years for most people to catch on. I would offer 1989 as a date, after which it's no longer possible for people to think that you can have the benefits of the technological project without a free market economy. Third item in the story is that in order to have a free market economy, one needs a limited government. Here I'm not talking about the size of the bureaucracy, but the functions that are performed. A limited government is here not to direct the economy, but to serve it by protecting property rights, enforcing contracts, and providing for dispute resolution. In order to have limited government, one needs the rule of law. The rule of law, I should remind you, is not the rule of lawyers. It's not to be confused with simply having a legal system, although in some countries of the world that would probably be pretty much an example of progress. A rule of law means that we live by procedural norms, not substantive norms, that these procedural norms are interpreted for us by judges who do not try to achieve specific targeted results. Once you attempt to politicize the law, to rig the outcome, you're no longer involved in the rule of law. You are, in fact, involved in the total politicization of law. I would also offer as a side thesis something that may offend some of you, but I'm convinced more than ever that the concept of the rule of law exists only in Anglo-American legal systems, and you will not get the full benefits of globalization until all legal systems resemble something like the Anglo-American system. And the final piece of the puzzle is, how do you maintain the rule of law? And here I would argue you'd need a particular culture. You need a culture that promotes a sense of independence, individuality, freedom and responsibility. I'm tempted to use the word autonomy, but I know it offends lots of people, but let me use it anyway, a culture that promotes personal autonomy. And now to close the loop of the account that I have given you, I would argue that the technological project is not simply about improving the material conditions of the world, although it certainly does that. It's not simply about increasing the amount of freedom that we have, although it certainly does that as well. But its most important function is it's an expression of our freedom. And so the spiritual quest of modernity is to use the technological project to be an opportunity for human beings to act in a free and responsible way. That I take it to be the logic of modernity. I take the spiritual dimension of that to be something that conservatives can certainly identify with. I would also maintain that it provides us with an opportunity to exercise a certain amount of responsibility. Right now, what kinds of people would oppose the account that I've just given? I would argue that the account that I've given, if I were going to characterize it, I would say it's largely Lockean. The only other narrative that can be opposed to this would be something like the Rousseauian Marxist narrative. This is not really a coherent alternative point of view. I spent my entire career trying to understand what the alternative is, and I'm convinced now that there is no alternative position, that there is merely a rhetoric of complaint rather than a serious attempt to explain things otherwise. So here we are with all the facts in our favor. If you want the technological project, you need free market economies. If you want free market economies, you need limited government. If you want limited government, you need the rule of law. If you want the rule of law, you need to have a certain kind of culture. Now, what sorts of people would feel threatened by this, and why does this become a problem? It obviously has an international dimension and a domestic dimension. In the international dimension, and I think John has expressed it very well, you have people who simply transferred the Rousseauian Marxist agenda to the international sphere, Euro-socialists, et cetera. And I would also add to this list a threat that I don't think people take seriously enough, the fact that Islamic radicals are more threatened by globalization than any other culture in the world. And I think if you think about what it would mean to be a free and responsible individual, you can begin to understand why. I think it is not an accident that most of the major conflicts in the world today involve Muslims. On the domestic scene, it's clear that things like multiculturalism, as Roger has pointed out to us, are simply more recent attempts to restate the leftist agenda. Having discovered that people are becoming far too rich, we're now threatened with global warming or other attempts to encourage us not to pursue our productivity. Multiculturalism is simply another way of trying to undermine things like the rule of law, constitutional guarantees, etc. So that's why globalization is a problem both domestically and internationally. Now, what sort of responses are possible here? I would suggest that there are four alternatives, and I'm borrowing this a bit from Samuel Huntington's latest book, Who Are We? It's possible to kind of retreat into something like Fortress America, where you simply become very defensive about what America is, and at least try to preserve that version of globalization here. Or you can become an American triumphalist and attempt to promote this view around the world. Or you can attempt to adopt multiculturalism or some version of the leftist agenda, again, to oppose this. Or one can even imagine something like Islamic jihadists as a fourth alternative. My own view varies. On Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I tend to become defensive and to be a Fortress America person. On Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, I become a kind of shameless triumphalist. So since today is Saturday, I'll push American triumphalism and argue that globalization is a wonderful opportunity for conservatives to reassert their intellectual leadership both at home and abroad. Now, I think we've given you enough to provoke some kind of response. So with the exception of Stan Evans, if you'd like to raise any questions or make comments, please come to the microphone and identify yourself. Stan, you can come too, but you don't have to identify yourself.